capping off a trilogy that no one knew was a trilogy with a chapter that was exactly not what anyone asked for sounds a whole lot like something M. Night Shyamalan would do. And he did. It was called Glass, and it was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America. Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
It is the number one movie in America. My name's Sean Collier. I'm here with a vampire and a werewolf. Which one is which?
Ooh. Rob?
I guess vampire by default.
Robin Hitchcock is your vampire. Camila Adams jumped at the opportunity to be your werewolf.
Well, I don't know what kind of sounds vampires make. I mean,
Yeah, like, they count things rhythmically in my experience, and you have a child, so you should.
Oh, know. Yes, I am very familiar with Count and his funky Transylvanian beat.
The Count's still doing the same thing?
He's still doing his thing, but now it's too, like, literally, like, I quote, a funky Transylvanian beat.
It's time to get up and stomp your feet. To this great foot-stomping Transylvanian beat. Start nice and slow.
One, two.
Then speed up more.
One, two, three, four.
Then stomp away.
One,
cause
two,
we're about
three,
to
four,
find out
five,
the number of the day.
What's the number? Stop, stop. What's the number? Stop, stop. What is the number?
But it slaps. That song slaps, man.
Robin, edit that in, please.
Oh, I absolutely will.
Well, I guess we're moving in the right direction. I mean, this is better than last week's movie. You know, low bar to clear, but...
Some better.
It is a quantum better than the film from last week. We're talking about Glass, the concluding chapter to the Unbreakable trilogy, which, like, I think M. Night wants you to call the... Train something or other trilogy, but no one but him has ever actually done that.
The what?
Like the train that got derailed?
Yeah, it like on Wikipedia, it's like the Unbreakable trilogy, aka the something two, the Pelham 1-2-3, not really trilogy. And it's like, that's what M. Night thinks it's called, and only M. Night, right?
Right, yeah, it's like
East
trying
Rail
to give yourself a cool nickname.
What was it, Robin?
It's East Rail 177. Camila, what were you saying?
This is like trying to give yourself a cool nickname.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, everybody calls me Killer. I don't think so.
And also, like, this isn't really about the train. The train isn't the main character here. So
wouldn't it be better if it were?
Yes.
I mean, he tries really hard to make it as such. Like, there's some rat droppings of that this is like the train is the main character.
So in Animal Crossing, there exists television in that world. Nobody owns a TV, but people talk about TV. Mm. And there is a show about trains in love.
Mm.
This thing is called Maglevs in Love, and some of my neighbors talk to me about it.
Why does that fill me with COVID joy? Like, why do I get a warm feeling like, oh, maybe there are trains in love somewhere out there? Like, why?
You've been tucked away for far too long. That's what that means.
Well, you know, they can't get the disease, so maybe the trains are the only things that can feel love. I don't know what the hell
that's
is going on.
All that's left. That's all that's left.
There are so many directions we can go with this episode. One of them is complaining. Don't worry, we'll get there. But because there's a lot of ground to cover, let's get to business. Here is Camila Adams, hopefully just recapping Glass and not trying to get to the whole events of this trilogy, which takes a longer YouTube video. Here's a 60-second recap. Go.
Glass picks up 3 weeks after Split. David, our unbreakable hero, has embraced his calling in fighting crime, specifically looking for McAvoy's horde, who have kidnapped 4 cheerleaders to sacrifice to the Beast. David rescues them, and a shit ton of cops and a psychiatrist, Dr. Staple, arrive to take everyone to the psych hospital. Dr. Staple specializes in fake superheroes, and surprise, Glass is one of her patients. We cycle through most of Kevin's personalities, David's son tries to get him out, and Mama Glass comes to visit. Casey, the Horde's victim who got away, comes to visit too because clearly she has Stockholm Syndrome. During a group therapy session, Dr. Staple tries to explain away everyone's abilities. Glass is playing possum while gaslighting the hell out of the hospital staff. Glass and the Horde escape, and suddenly Glass is Don King and pits the Beast and David to fight to the death. Plot twist, Kevin's dad was on David's train with Glass that Glass derailed, killing Kevin's dad. Glass is broken, Split is put back together, and Unbreakable swallows some water, and oh my god, I forgot about the Shamrock crew. Once again, M. Night, shame on you, has tricked me into believing this time it'll be different. This is such a toxic relationship.
Beautiful.
Close, but no cigar.
But beautiful.
Yeah. Oh my god. I mean, technically you didn't make it. It was 62 seconds, but the ability to even kind of address the tidal wave of plot in this movie is quite an impressive achievement.
But there's so, it takes like a solid hour for said plot to arrive. Mm-hmm. Like, and I know this is true in Unbreakable too, but I think it works better there. But there's just like an hour of mood.
Well, it's supposed to be, yeah, like you said, Unbreakable, it makes sense because that is an origin story, no matter what Glass tries to tell us later in this one. But, you know, it makes sense that it would be so slow and stepping. And this was like supposed to be the big trilogy, like the third part of the trilogy, that this is where everything is shoot 'em up, bang, bang, let's go. But alas.
This movie feels so like spiritually void. Like it feels so soulless and unnecessary. Who wanted this?
I'm going to tell you right now.
People to make it the number one movie in America.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, like, and I know I've said it before, like, I really, really, really enjoyed McAvoy's performance in Split.
Yes, and you're not alone. Like, Colin was talking about how much he thought that movie was so cool, and, like, while we were watching this, he kept sort of going like, whatever McAvoy would do, his party trick. Okay, yeah, no, like, good. He's switching characters real fast. Good for him.
And I also, you know, and I saw Glass in the theater because I was like, yes, I want more of McAvoy's character, even though I did not particularly care for Unbreakable or M. Night or the fact that this is supposed to be a trilogy. I was like, whatever, I'll go ahead. Here's my little $10. Fine. But, but yeah, like this just didn't need to happen. This is so unnecessary.
So it's interesting. Well, so we started from Camila saw Unbreakable 20 years ago, did not care for it.
Right.
I saw Unbreakable 20 years ago, loved it, and Sean had never seen it until this week.
Interesting.
I watched Unbreakable the other day. That might be affected by the fact that I didn't like Split or Glass. It might be affected by, you know, everything M. Night has ever done other than The Sixth Sense. But Unbreakable didn't do a lot for me. It's better than this movie, and it's better than several of the worst M. Night movies.
Yes.
But Unbreakable feels like the drawn out beginning of a story that he never told. Like everything, and maybe I'm poisoned by Marvel structure. Everything that happens in Unbreakable would have been done just as effectively in the first 40 minutes of a new Marvel character introduction movie. You know, we go through all of this, like, accepting that he has these powers and meeting with Mr. Glass, and then the turn that Mr. Glass is the bad guy, and then the movie freezes, and it says words of what the second and third act would have been.
Oh, gosh, the ending that pissed me off. Embarrassingly bad.
That's why I left the theater pissed.
Yeah.
And so, I think up until that point, that's kind of always been M. Night's calling card. Like, I think all of his other movies up to that point were that real slow and drag out, and we're just like, he's already waiting for, like, I'm just going to tease you and I'm just going to pull you in a little bit. And then, oh my God, there's going to be a plot twist, because that was his thing until like each plot twist of his got just like regressed, just got less and less of like, all right, sure, fine. Like The Village, I called like 10 minutes into the movie.
Oh. Immediately. And I'm bad at that stuff. I never guess the twist. And just as soon as they showed the fake date, I was like, but what if it isn't?
Right. And I was like half joking when I said it. Like, oh. I was so mad.
Colin said something while we were watching this where Colin does this thing all the time where we watch a movie that he has seen and I haven't, and he assumes that I've seen it because I've seen so many movies. Mm-hmm. And then he starts talking about the end of the movie and twists and stuff like I know. And while we were watching Glass, he was like, yeah, that girl turns out to be a bad guy at the end, talking about the teenager. I was like, stop it. He's like, I'm just kidding. And then he was like, wait, am I kidding? Am I accidentally remembering the end of the movie? I was relieved that he was wrong. Although, come on, with her being in love with James Matthew, one of his select personalities, like, right. Oh, gross. I mean, among other things, isn't she in high school?
Yes, yes. Let's talk about okay. Oh my God. I feel like M. Night should be on some sort of watch list somewhere because I think that he's got a thing for teenage girls. So, I mean, because there was just, because I went ahead and watched all three this weekend. And just watching.
I still have not seen Split.
And watching Split again, I was like, there's just so much just gratuitous, naked teenage, not fully, like one girl's walking around in her underwear and her underpants, and the other girl's walking around in basically her, in her bra. And it's really unnecessary for the storyline.
Yeah, the real reason I haven't watched Split, like, I was definitely turned off from Sean's rant, as previously discussed, and just kind of concerns that it was going to be insensitive about mental illness, but I think that, honestly, at the end of the day, it was like, I don't like abduction horror movies very much, and like, teenage girls in peril, like, right. it seems like it's going to make me more skeeved out than anything else.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk about my feeling for, like, a minute and then move on and try to do the rest of this with that having been established, because it is off to the side.
I going to cut in a clip from your old episode, but I couldn't find it.
No, yeah, and I'm glad, because I, for some reason, it hit me so hard that I was like having a Christian Bale on the Terminator set style meltdown by the end of that episode. it's not that severe. Here's my thing. I think M. Night Shyamalan has a weird disdain for the mentally ill. Mm-hmm. Split, to me, was a weird experience because this character was seeking treatment, was fundamentally, you know, going through the steps that a mentally ill person should go through, and oops, one of your personalities is a murderer and maybe has superpowers. The immediate, M. Night's movie immediately prior to Split was The Visit, where there were two old people who tormented and tortured their grandchildren because they had dementia. Even in The Sixth Sense, not arguing with the quality of The Sixth Sense, that Donnie Wahlberg played a former patient of Bruce Willis's. There's a weird trend.
And the Munchausen by proxy lady.
Right. There's a weird trend in M. Night's movies of watch out for the mentally ill, they might kill you. I know that is kind of the case in all horror movies to a certain degree. You know, all horror villains are quote-unquote crazy. In M. Night's, it feels a little bit more callous and a little bit less responsible in these portrayals. I just think he doesn't like crazy people and really likes to scapegoat them. And that feels icky to me. That said, McAvoy is great. If we put that aside, he gives a great performance. Split, from a pure filmmaking perspective, where I just look at it in a vacuum, is better than most M. Night movies. It just rubs me the wrong way. The end.
Okay.
One thing I wanted to say about M. Night, and just like thinking about how much I liked Unbreakable when I first saw it, I think that part of it is it came out in 2000. And so I was 16, going back to my whole thing of like, Taxi Driver isn't that good. You just saw it when you were 16.
Right.
So there's partially that. And then partially in 2000, like, Spider-Man hadn't even come out yet. Like, the doing a superhero story, but seriously, like, was much less of a thing and felt much more novel and exciting. And then I think the third thing is that at the time, M. Night was this exciting new talent on the rise, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you walk into that theater with so much goodwill towards whatever it is he's trying to do. And now we have just the polar opposite of that. Like, it's hard to think of a director who I, like, maybe Mel Gibson is, like, a director who, when I hear that they've directed something, I brace myself to hate it.
Right.
And, like, Mel Gibson, like, has a bad personality. As far as I know, M. Night isn't.
I don't know much about his personal life or anything.
Yeah, he just makes annoying movies.
Right.
So, yeah, it's very... It's interesting how much perspective shapes your opinion of a movie. I did rewatch Unbreakable on Friday, and I was like, yeah, this is not as good as I thought it was. I still think it's good.
I think it's good. I mean, there's almost... I'm glad I finally saw it. There's almost no point in watching it in a post-Marvel world. Like,
yes.
Right.
They've deconstructed... And post-Deadpool and post-Birds of Prey. Like, all of these things have been deconstructed so much that... You know, someone kind of addressing it before any of those movies existed is like, yeah, we know. So
it's like watching Unforgiven for the first time a few years ago, and I'm like, this movie has no reason to exist now that Deadwood has occurred. So I've seen this done, but 40 times better. So,
but my favorite thing about Unbreakable is how long did he have to search before he found a second full Haley Joel Osment? He just found a second one.
And respect for bringing him back, although I thought he's coming, like, fully out of retirement. Apparently he's on, apparently there is an American adaptation of the Australian film Animal Kingdom as a television series, and apparently Spencer Tree Clark is on it.
Spencer Tree Clark did a really good job of continuing to look exactly like himself. Like, we hadn't seen him for 19 years, and it was like, oh, that is the exact same face, but a grown-up.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, it's literally like he stretched his 10-year-old self. It's like, okay, there you go.
Also, what, I feel really sorry for that child. He's grown up being his dad's chair guy or whatever they call it in Spider-Man. Like, that seems a really demented way to come of age.
Isn't it? All right. Remind me after the Facty segment that I want to get into how it's weird that all of these characters have a second and none of them needed to be there. But anyway, facts. Glass, released January 18th of 2019, the third Number One movie of that year, of last year. This is, by the way, the first time we have covered a film which became the number one movie in America after this podcast began. Yay.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
This is the first movie we've done that is younger than this podcast.
Gotcha, thank you.
Sean had to add this to the master list.
Right,
Yeah, that was a little thrill. I was like, wow, this was just last year?
I know.
It's been a long year.
Right?
Last year was 12 years ago, so fine. Glass won the weekend with $40.3 million. The only other new release was an import of the latest Dragon Ball Z feature, Dragon Ball Super Broly. It was a very slow weekend, and so Dragon Ball debuted in fourth with $9.8 million.
Did you say Super Broly?
I assume that Broly is a character name.
Okay.
B-R-O-L-Y. I know it just sounds like you did that very Broly, but
so
like...
Broly!
Right.
Glass won its second weekend with $18.8 million over two debuting films. The Kid Who Would Be King, which is not bad.
But, I know, but no one on earth saw it.
Yeah, it wasn't, yeah. I was cheering for it because I'm always like, let live action family movies come back. And
agreed.
They don't. They're done.
But I didn't see it, so I'm part of the problem.
That was fine. $7.1 million, fourth place. And Serenity. Remember, not the one about the spaceship. The one with Anne Hathaway and Matthew McConaughey.
With an M. Night worthy twist.
Oh, this was a twist that M. Night would have gone, that's a little much. It was. I don't want to spoil it because no one saw that movie. I saw it at a drive-in. I watch it. I saw it at a drive-in. I was on vacation in Arizona and I found a drive-in that was showing that. And what the hell was the other? Escape Room. Serenity and Escape Room. And I thought, here is a drive-in double feature.
That really is. It's on and Amazon.
It is worth it because the whiplash you will experience is so profound. Debuted in eighth with $4.4 million, which that's, in and of itself is odd. Matthew McConaughey and Anne Hathaway star in a movie that debuted in eighth. Glass won its third weekend with $6.8 million. The debut that weekend was Miss Bala with Gina Rodriguez. Supposed to be her breakout hit. It was not.
Oh my god.
That debuted in third with $6.8 million. It didn't have far to fall after that. It only spent 5 weeks in the top 10, despite three of them being number one because other movies started coming out. Glass earned $111 million, good for 24th overall for the year. It did open... Wow. Go ahead, Robin.
I'm just surprised. That's
way
higher than I would have guessed.
It opened very slightly higher, but earned less overall than Split did in 2017. Split opened just about the same, $40 million, but went on to earn $138.2 million. Split is also a three-week number one movie in America. Unbreakable is not a number one movie in America and did not perform as well as its sequels. Unbreakable opened in second place over Thanksgiving weekend in 2000 behind How the Grinch Stole Christmas with Jim Carrey. It opened to $30.3 million, earned $95 million overall. The recent M. Night Shyamalan films have been very profitable because he started self-financing and making them for very, very cheap. The Visit was made for $5 million, Split was made for $9 million, Glass was made for $20 million. If you combine all three, that's less than the budget of The Sixth Sense 21 years ago.
Wow. So, how is he paying Bruce Willis? Is it entirely back end?
I think so, or they're taking, you know, union scale and nothing more. I mean,
because they don't need money.
He is either, notice that he's either using people who need a boost, like even Sarah Paulson is very established but doesn't get a lot of feature work, or people he's worked with several times before.
Sarah really wanted to do this. Apparently she took the job without reading the script because she wanted the chance to work with M. Night.
Okay.
I don't know. But she's also keeps going back to American Horror Story, so I mean, I guess she's got a thing.
I want the best for her.
I know.
She's in some bad stuff.
Yes. Just want to sit her down, Sarah, sweetie.
Yeah, you're better than that. I'm not saying American Horror Story is bad. I've never seen
some of them are. Some of them are.
But she's on Mrs. America, and I'm kind of like, you're better than this. Almost everyone on that show is better than that, so never mind.
Couple quick things. This is a rare case where deleted scenes, like normal deleted scenes, were reused much, much later.
I was wondering about that.
I thought so.
Because I was like, this looks too good to be CGI.
Right.
The flashbacks, scene where David Dunn drowns, or semi-drowns in the swimming pool, Mr. Glass on the amusement park ride, the one little bit where he's talking to his child son, those are just straight up deleted scenes from Unbreakable that he cut back into the film.
Mr. Glass and the Amusement Park Ride was, for me, the highlight of the film. I was like, this is really well done. Like, they've really well established, like, the dread, kid acting and the mom acting were both really good, and now it makes so much more sense that this was from early in his career when he still tried hard.
It didn't add anything to the plot, and this movie was 128 minutes long for no goddamn reason, but it was a well-done scene.
Yeah. Maybe it should have been the original movie in Unbreakable.
Apparently, each of these movies is 11 minutes longer than its previous, than its predecessor.
Does that mean something?
I don't know.
No one loves beating up on M. Night Shyamalan more than the Razzie Awards. Normal caveat that the Razzies are problematic and kind of dumb at this point. But
they've always been dumb. Yeah. They've never been good.
Glass did not escape their ire. Bruce Willis was nominated for Worst Supporting Actor. Again, like we said during the Stigmata episode, Bruce Willis was not the problem here.
No, he was not. He did the best with what he had.
He lost that award to James Corden in Cats. As you'd imagine, Cats won 6 Razzies, including Worst Picture, Worst Director, and most of the Razzies. Finally, because January is such a dumping ground, Glass has the 5th highest January opening of all time with this, whatever it was, $40 million and some dollars. Number one is American Sniper, which had an $89.2 million opening weekend in a January. Split is 7th. So, January.
Also, American Sniper, does that really count? Like, that was its wide open, right? It opened for...
Yeah. I mean, we're back into box office mojo. What are you doing anymore? But in terms of, you know, an opening wide release weekend, I believe 4th, I could be wrong, but one or two spots above Glass is Bad Boys for Life from this year, which
our presumptive box office king for the year.
Thanks to COVID-19, Bad Boys for Life may moonwalk into being the number one movie of 2020.
I still haven't watched it.
Yeah, I honestly, every time we do the, what should we watch tonight?
Right.
I'm like, maybe, no.
I just breeze right past it. And it's like, oh.
So this movie, Glass, why though? Like,
why for?
I mean, so Unbreakable, as discussed, sets up the world and then pieces out.
That's how most of M. Night's stuff is. It's like his movies have a great premise, but then the shit just falls apart towards the end. It's like he started off strong with his science project like months in advance, and then he was like, oh, I'll finish it tomorrow. And then, you know, whoa, shit, it's night before. I forgot to finish my shit. And this
just combine an acid and a base and see what happens.
So that's where this universe sits for 17 years. Split happens, and then in the tag at the end, we throw out, like, guess what? I'm building this M. Night Superman superhero universe, and we get to the next movie. The three of them sit the fuck around for 90 minutes.
The first hour is all sitting.
And then he kills them all off and ends the series.
And it's sad. Like,
yeah.
I knew that they all died at the end. I don't remember why I knew that, but it got really, like, grim at the end, because they're, like you said, they all have a second.
Yes, they all, I'm assuming Casey, they just threw her in there because Kevin needed someone to fight for him.
And because Anya Taylor-Joy, like, is a rising star. I don't know how much, I remember seeing her in the trailer for this and being like, why is she still in the mix? that doesn't make any sense.
It makes no because GD sense whatsoever.
One has a kid and one has a mom, and he has
a girlfriend.
Right, because he let her go. There was a lot of torturing and a lot of like trauma before that, he decided that, oh, you're broken, so therefore you are part of the pure. And you could go.
It's so gross. But anyway, even not really enjoying the movie, kind of losing all care I ever had for any of these. I certainly didn't have anything attached to the Split character, but any care I had for any of the characters was pretty much worn out after the first hour of sitting and talking. But then this montage of them dying in the arms of their loved ones was really, like, upsetting. And not in any kind of cathartic, good movie emotion way. Just like, oh, this is horrible.
I didn't get that. I think I was mostly...
That's what I felt.
I was mostly just like over it by that point. It's like, oh. And then we had to go through each of Kevin's personality, each of 23 personalities had a death scene.
I do want to shout out Camila's amazing joke that occurred over text. Normally we try not to talk too much about the movies in our private channels so that it can all be fresh for the podcast, but I couldn't stop myself and I texted these guys, James McAvoy got first billing? Like, I was truly shocked, and Camila responded with, well, he plays the most characters. And then they list them all in the actual end credits. It's like, yes, the 20-person list, James McAvoy, and then, like, David.
Did we need this? Did we need to really? Was it a question? I mean, was anybody confused? Who played Miss Patricia? I don't.
I did like one of the, I mean, there are scenes in Glass that I like, and one of them is when they're first turning the blinky personality switch light machine on him, because, like, for all of this, he has 24 different personalities. In Split, we saw about 6.5.
Really?
We pretty much stayed. You don't go through all of them. So I was like, oh, here's some more. I wonder what's up with these characters. They're interesting.
Right. I wanted to know more about the Japanese film professor.
Yes.
He was like, I'm not a part of any of this. So I just.
I have a question. So I know, like, a lot of this movie is Sarah Paulson's character being like, you're not really super or whatever. Mm-hmm. At any point did Mr. Glass claim to have any superpowers? He's just a smart, evil guy with a bone disorder.
Yeah, I guess he more thinks of himself as a super villain. I don't know why he would have been necessarily on her radar.
Right, super villains are real.
Right, yes.
One of them is the president.
Right, yes, exactly. He just, masterminds all this stuff together. And so, yeah, no, he absolutely didn't claim to have any sort of superpowers.
A little weird that she would be worried about him.
I was a little confused by how this is her niche. Like, this is her thing is like, I study people who think they're superheroes. But then when she's in their group session, she's like, don't you guys find it strange that you're the only three superheroes in the world? How is this your specialized field?
Also, who's funding this? I assume it's the Secret Society of Shamrocks, but
who's like, funding
that
this?
That kind of mental hospital does not exist anymore.
And how did they capture a serial kidnapper, torturer, murderer, and a vigilante who has been the subject of a months-long, or if not years-long, police investigation, and hand them over to a weird doctor and say, you got 3 days. That's right. Not how law works.
No. That's I was like, okay, we'll see what you can do in 3 days. This dude literally murdered two girls and just kidnapped like four other ones. So, right. No.
And they're like, well, we will give you all the resources, including this array of water guns.
Oh my god, the water. Fucking water. How did they get his room ready so fast?
his weakness is drowning, just like every human. We're all susceptible to drowning.
You swallowed some water and you shut down. Yeah, that's how that goes. That's pretty much how it goes. And I don't know what M. Night just has a problem with water himself. Because that was like
Less
part Bryce
of this. Dallas Howard's in it.
Of Signs, yeah. Right? Like that was.
And Signs. Well, that here's the thing. No one ever told him that he's a very bad writer. Like, he's an idea guy.
Exactly.
And occasionally his ideas are sound. But if you look at the way the plots move in his movies and the way they get to the twist, there are so many gaps. The dialogue in this movie is terrible.
God. Has he met people? I don't think so. Like that.
But credit to Samuel Jackson. Once he finally does talk, which takes an hour and 5 minutes, clocked it.
Me too.
He can say this nonsense and make it sound like a thing that a human would say.
Right?
Like a very weird eccentric human, but I believe that character exists, even though he makes no sense. He's that good an actor.
Yeah. Agreed.
And not to gloss over it, this is a movie where you have Samuel L. Jackson and you don't let him talk for 65 minutes. What? Why? What are you doing? Let's cast Schwarzenegger and film him from the neck up. Like, what?
I do appreciate some of, like, this is probably the only time that I will praise M. Night, but that his directing, or maybe it's not even him, but just the cinematography of this one, and even Split, and also Unbreakable, like some of them, just some of the camera choices and angles and shots, they're actually really well done. And it's
I totally agree.
And it's very stimulating, and it's, it's really intriguing how a lot of them are. Like, I would love a poster of the wide shot of them sitting in the group session. In the pink room. Like, it's just, some of the stuff is just like, just beautiful.
I wish that I didn't hate him the way I do. And I wish that he would make good movies. I want our old dreams of M. Night Shyamalan to come back.
They've all been shattered.
I want us to believe in him again.
Wasn't there a whole thing, like, for a while, people, I don't know what movie triggered it, but a bunch of people were like trying to start a GoFundMe to send him back to film school.
It had to be The Last Airbender, right? I mean, that's...
maybe that's probably what it was.
God, that thing. What a mess.
You're right, Camila. He's a pretty good director, particularly in tone and in creating those interesting visual compositions. It's just the writing. Like, right. I look at my notes and most of them are things that just don't make, They had cameras showing him leaving the room, but no cameras showing him tampering with medical equipment. This the whole, the, even the one that you mentioned, which was kind of a good scene where they have group therapy together. Yes, why exactly?
Why are they, that's not what group therapy is for.
Right, I no.
But they're a supervillain, or they are a super secret society. They don't have to make mental health care choices for reason or reason.
I guess. And I guess, you know, time. She was only had 3 days, so she couldn't really, she didn't want to dedicate three individual sessions with them.
My example scene is at Bruce Willis's home security retail store, which I don't think that's a thing. but anyway, his new employee is played by M. Night Shyamalan, and because I had just watched Unbreakable, I'm like, oh, M. Night Shyamalan also has a cameo in that as
all three of them.
Is it the same guy in all three?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I was going to be upset because I was waiting for it, like the mention of the Unbreakable cameo. I was like, wait a minute. If he doesn't talk about, if there isn't something that tells me that he remembers him from that, I'm going to be really upset.
So I paused it and I said, is this going to be the same guy? Unpause. And immediately M. Night's character is like, yeah, I've encountered you before when you worked security 19 years ago. And it's just so like, oh, they could have just given him a name tag or something, right?
Right.
By the way, I messaged Robin as I was watching Unbreakable. Security guard at a college football stadium. Not a job. Absolutely not a job.
It's a gig.
You would work 6 days a year. I mean, there's no there.
There's no there there.
More events occur, like, they probably have concerts.
Having lived within a quarter of a mile of the largest stadium in North America, it was empty conservatively 320 days a year.
Okay,
like, campus events and, you know, like, there were never any concerts in a place that big.
I think that what happens in State College and what happens in Philadelphia are very different.
It could be. It absolutely could.
Like, even think
about
here in Pittsburgh, like Peterson Events Center, before COVID, stuff happened there many, many, many days.
But
I know because I have to deal with that traffic.
Right. This is just a continuing example that M. Night Shyamalan does not know the world around him or what happens in it or what regular people are or what they do. We could go forever.
I would like to point out Mama Glass's atrocious age makeup. That's all. I just want to put it out there.
Okay, the opposite of the good job continuing to cast Spencer Tree Clark. Why cast the same woman who played she was playing a character in the 60s?
Right.
Right?
Right.
So you have this woman who was cast to look middle-aged in the 60s, and now you want her to look like she's existing in 2019. You cast the same actress? Like, that's... It's not gonna work.
Like, we could have gone and gotten a different actress.
Yeah, I do really like her wig, though. especially with my coronavirus roots growing in, and I'm just like, the top half of your head being gray, what I'm looking for in my style icons right now.
Nice. Back to everyone's sidekick. These three are here at the end. Why? Like,
they
one...
all got it together to be... I assume that they're going to start a school for gifted youngsters.
Why would the mom, though, want her son to be remembered as such? Like,
she thinks that he is exceptional, and so that makes him important and her a good mom.
Ignoring the fact that he's the worst terrorist in American history by the standards.
Right.
I don't even mean then. I mean when they have the big showdown outside of the hospital. What are those three doing there?
They were having a meeting, talking to Sarah Paulson about stuff.
Right, because Sarah Paulson tells, oh girl, the lights don't work anymore, so you have to be the one to bring Kevin out. You have to be the one to talk him down. How? Why?
And she's
why?
Like, she's like, okay, I will. Like, my eyes are 4 feet apart on my head. She's a very pretty woman.
No, it can be. In Emma, that was jumping out at me. It's like, why is there all that real estate there? Anyway.
Also, she has three first names.
That's true.
Right.
She's very good. The Witch. The Witch is great.
I actually said when we started Glass, I told Colin, because Colin said, I've been meaning to watch The Witch. And I was like, oh, we're watching it next. full disclosure, I fell asleep during Glass. So I had to watch the last hour this morning. But yeah, The Witch, she's really good in it.
Yeah. And this is the last thing. Again, we could do this all day. like the Twilight episode. This is a movie that absolutely never gets to the fireworks factory. It spent so much time building up this tower and like, oh, we're going to have a fight outside of the building, like, you know, the new skyscraper.
Nakatomi Plaza, by the way.
Right. I had to Google, I was like, the name of the tower from Die Hard. I was like, are we sure this? Okay, it wasn't Osaka.
Yes.
They zoom in on the mocked up Philadelphia Magazine cover.
Does
and
that
it
exist?
Says, Philadelphia Magazine?
Yeah. Yes.
That's
do you
a real
have a
name.
One-sided rivalry with them?
No, not. I mean, everybody's kind of friends. Like, you know, you beat up on the crappier magazines in your own market, who I will not name, not not the other. Everyone gets along. Right. Anyway, membership in the City and Regional Magazine Association aside, it zooms in on this thing, and it says, such and such tower, a true marvel.
Yeah. And they use the right font. It's very cheesy.
It would only be worse if M. Night had literally like popped in frame and winked.
Yeah. Fuck off with this. This is why we hate you. You know, he has this famous disdain for film critics. That was the whole thing in Lady in the Water. He wrote a film critic into Lady in the Water, played by Bob Balaban, just so the monster could devour him and we could all celebrate because he was an annoying, squirrely character. We hate you because of shit like this.
Also, at that point in his career, he hadn't gotten that many bad reviews. Like,
by
even
Lady
in
the
Village,
Water,
which I think was sort of the, like, turning point for most people. Like,
everyone was
the
like,
Village
ah.
got decent reviews. People were like, the twist in this one is kind of dumb.
I didn't hate The Village. Like,
it's
when
scary.
When Lady in the Water came out, there wasn't an M. Night movie that was, like, a stinker.
Right.
And he corrected that with Lady in the Water. Where, again, where he cast himself as a writer and then hired an actress to look at him and say, you're a great writer whose words will change the world. This
Holy
is
shit.
Why we hate
wow.
you.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, I never saw that. I think after The Village, I was like, fuck you, I'm out. And then... And then I came back for The Visit.
This run of episodes is making my quarantine worse. Like, I mean, I love both of you in doing this show, but like spending 3 weeks with War for the Planet of the Apes, Twilight, and this, just going, what the fuck? God damn it.
At the end fight scene, when the beast is literally, roar! Like, he literally, it's not like, like, I've seen people growl on camera, but he literally roar. Not convincing. I don't know.
My favorite line in the whole movie is Sarah Paulson saying, can I ask you about your mother? She passed away from, and then she pauses, and we all fill in. She passed away from M. Night Shyamalan no longer being able to afford to pay Robin Wright.
Right? And that's what I was saying. I was like, because Robin Wright was like, nah, dude.
I'm good.
Fuck what you heard. I'm coming back.
Well, then, should we rate it?
Let's do it.
For all of this, it's not terrible, mainly because the cast is very good. I want to see Anya Taylor-Joy and James McAvoy in an actual film together. They were great. The whole cast was great. A couple of these scenes work. It's visually interesting. It just doesn't need to exist and makes no sense, even from a fan service perspective. So, 38.
Wow.
That's what I also put down.
Hey, it's a match.
Damn, y'all. 68. And mind you, like, well, mind you, like I said, I enjoyed a lot of the film composition. Samuel L. was great in it. And I think McAvoy was probably accounts for 50 of those points. So.
Fair enough. Also, once again, our ratings differ greater than 30.
Our ratings exactly differ 30.
We did not put greater than or equal to on that bingo card.
Damn it.
Well, this will definitely be the highest rated episode we spent the whole thing complaining about. Like, for a movie where we were just going, get foot to papa! It gets a surprisingly respectable 48. 48 even is the score. That is just below the aforementioned War for the Planet of the Apes, just above Ants. There you go. Put that on your poster, M. Night. This movie is slightly better than Ants.
I'm going to have to disagree with you there.
And to the bingo card. Let's see if somebody can get a second veto so we can stop being so conservative with deploying the veto.
All right, I hear you loud and clear. Yeah,
I don't think
no,
that
it's
anything.
Fine. It's fine. Think... I'm glad that I finally saw Unbreakable and now I've seen that. It's fine.
Well, yeah, there's nothing. Unless...
squares.
Unless you count Hedwig and what's her face breaking up.
It also comes close to taking place in one location, which makes more sense now that I know that they made it for 85 cents.
Right.
But there is at least, you know, one solid scene filmed for this movie at the train station, so.
Right, yeah.
Unless David Dunn is a fish out of water.
No, that's because rude. He's a fish in water.
Yeah, really.
Wait, is it I know it was free on HBO. Is it free on Amazon?
Or? No, it's just HBO.
Oh.
We've got no squares. No squares. No movement on the bingo card this week.
Got no squares to hold me down.
No, Robin, I'm not mad at you for the last three non-vetoes. They all made sense in context. It's just been a rough run.
I've been updating our spreadsheet, making it a little bit more data rich, and going through the master list, I'm like, ooh, I need a veto on pocket for this one. I need a veto in pocket for this one.
Basically, Robin's not here to play. She didn't have time for the shenanigans. She's not going to get caught.
That's the big difference. Camila, me and you are like, I'm not watching that shit, no, and play our veto in February.
Right.
And Robin's like, things could happen.
You don't know, guys. You don't know.
It's time for You Can Handle the Truth, the segment where we talk about other things that we watched. That's the whole segment. Robin?
I watched Ma, speaking of teenage abduction horror. I watched it on Mother's Day because I thought that was funny. The thing that I liked about that movie, like, it's not very good, but the thing that I liked is that the teenagers are not bad people. Which, I feel like most movies I watch about teenagers, they're depicted as, like, total brats. Or movies that are about teenagers, that have teenagers, but also adults in them, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, and especially because the adults, like, spoilers, Ma's whole plot is to get revenge for teenagers' parents, because they tormented her when she was a teenager. Like, the way that the parents act is the way that teenagers normally act in movies, but the teenagers who are in danger here are just, like, they're irresponsible and, like, one of them's a bitch, but, like, they seem like real people. So that was the thing I liked about that movie.
I missed it, but that was wasn't that from Neon? Like, that had some
or
serious...
No, it was Blumhouse.
Oh, okay. But yeah, I know that
one of the abducted kids is also in the beginning of Glass, is one of the new abducted teens.
Oh, really?
She's got a little beat for herself now, doesn't she?
Yes.
I want to recommend A Good Woman Is Hard to Find. It is a kind of a small British crime thriller. It's playing at virtual cinemas, including Row House Online at rowhousecinema.com. Stars Sarah Bolger, who, like, you might half recognize, maybe. She was in The Lazarus Effect, and she is recurring on Once Upon a Time. She was a little kid. Robin, do you remember In America from 2002?
Yes, I do. I own that on DVD.
She was one of the little kids in America, and is an adult now. This is just a really compelling, tight little drama. She's a single mother in, like, the bad part of London, and a guy robs some drug dealers and then runs into her house to hide, and then she gets sucked into his criminal enterprise. It's exactly what I want from, like, a tight action movie.
That sounds good.
And she was fantastic in it. Dario Argento's Deep Red. Finally watched that, going back to some of the Italian classics. It's excellent. All of those giallo movies, that's 60s and 70s Italian horror, is beautiful, and then it's kind of good too, but it's just so perfectly crafted that you'd love watching it.
I did not see anything new. I am up to Cabin in the Woods on my alphabetical order DVD list.
Please never stop telling us where you are in your alphabetical order list.
And I just, like, messed up Dan's whole everything when he was like, he wanted to watch something else. He's like, hey, that kind of falls in. I was like, no, that's in the regular DVDs. I'm working on the Blu-rays right now. So, and he's like, he just kind of walked out of the room shaking.
You soared past the Bs. Give us a B that you own a Blu-ray of.
Bohemian Rhapsody, Boondock Saints.
I've never made it through Boondock Saints. Like, once or twice I started it, and I was, like, just not in the mood that
day. It's so much fun!
It is. Okay. It really is. And I don't know if it's one of those you need, because I think, like, I feel like everybody who got introduced to that movie and loves that movie was, like, in college in a dorm. Yeah. Like, when it happened, so I don't know if it's, like...
a movie that is only good in dorm rooms.
Right, so I don't know if you missed that spot, like, if you're not, not gonna...
I've watched it again as an adult, and it's obviously not good, but I still find it, like, crackerjack fun.
Yeah, like, it's a lot of fun. Like, I met Rocco from it, and,
cool.
and he and invited us to, like, an after party, so we were, like, kicking it with him and Sean Patrick Flannery. And it was
the young,
like,
Indiana Jones himself.
Yes, exactly. And I think Norman Reedus passed through, but I did not meet him.
Yeah, who would have thought that Norman Reedus would become more successful than Sean Patrick Flannery? Not I.
Not me, because I was all about SPF.
Yeah.
Back in the day. And yeah, Norman just, like, breezed right through him. Like, he's, like, the blue-uptuated on him.
I'm just going to go spend some time killing some zombies, winning heart.
You never know what's going to be your big old meal ticket.
I may be about to go on a massive Tarantino rewatch because...
I don't know if the mic picked it up, but I just sucked air through my teeth because that makes me nervous for you, Sean.
Mary Beth really wanted to... We should rewatch Kill Bill sometime, which I fully agree. Kill Bill is one of my favorite movies.
Can't get us one movie?
I'm very persnickety about it, but yes, I count Kill Bill as one movie.
So anytime you watch it, you must watch Volume 1 and 2 together in the same sitting?
No, I'm not, like, personally. It's because there was a brief window after Volume 2 came out that certain theaters were showing them with an intermission, but back to back. And I saw one of those at the Oaks Theater, and I was like, this is meant to be watched this way. Like, there is a whole arc to that movie, which is only apparent if you're watching it back to back. So yes, right. If it's two,
I watched
it
back to back for the first time. Okay. I did not see it in the theater. I watched it on probably VHS while I was recovering from wisdom tooth surgery. And I remember thinking, going in, this is one movie. I'm doing this the right way. And going out, that is two movies, and the first one is great, and the second one is crummy. If they were of the same quality, I think I might be more inclined to think of them as one movie. But I just find the first one so much better than the second one.
Same.
It probably is, but I love them both. This was the big shock when we did years ago. Aaron Kleiber and I did what are your 10 favorite movies? Not the 10 best movies ever made, your 10 favorite movies. Mm. And that was the shocker that Kill Bill was, like, ninth on my list as one movie. Anyway, Mary Beth wanted to rewatch them. I thought, I will, but they're going to look better. So I started poking around to see, like, there's got to be some, like, definitive Blu-ray edition of both Kill Bills. There's not. No. What I did find was, like, a kind of cheap, quickie, 8-movie Tarantino box set that was $51 on Blu-ray because it's a weird Canadian printing. Like,
still
I got
Region 1.
Yeah,
right, exactly.
So now I have I have everything from Reservoir Dogs through Django.
And probably with a French audio track.
With a French, just the spine of each has the title twice, once in English and once in French, and I got them all for cheap, so
well, that
maybe
makes it
I'm
extra
doing
classy. That classes it up a little bit when you got the titles in French. If I were to ever be interested in acting, and if I were to ever audition and need a monologue, I would choose the Queen Crime Syndicate, the Lucy Liu's monologue from
that's
Kill Bill
choice.
1. Like, that's. I have it, like, randomly, like, on a playlist or something. I listen to it every so often.
That's beautiful.
Other than revisiting Kill Bill in higher definition, I'm most excited about seeing Jackie Brown, because I've seen it exactly once. And
Jackie Brown
I
is so good. I think that's my favorite Tarantino.
I think I've only seen it one time.
It's hard for it to not be, I mean, Pulp Fiction?
Pulp Fiction's good. I saw Pulp Fiction kind of late, kind of the same thing with Unbreakable and Unforgiven, where it's like, right, I've seen better imitators.
Yeah.
I think Death Proof is probably mine, if that's, and I don't recall if that's right, Was that Robert Rodriguez or was that Tarantino?
No, Death Proof is Tarantino's. And if you, I assume you have. If you haven't, see the full version of it. Because what you saw in Grindhouse was like a 60 to 70 minute cut, and then this Blu-ray that I have and the DVDs have like, okay, here it is as a full movie, and it's great. I love Death Proof.
I've never seen it, period.
Oh, it's so good.
It's so awesome.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's previewing a You Can't Handle the Truth of the Future that may or may not happen, depending on which DVDs I watch. Let's draw a movie. It's another late number, 1181, very low on the list again. That's how we got to War for the Planet of the Apes. 1181 is Underworld Evolution.
Which one is that?
I mean, which one
is
any of the
other? It's more vampires than werewolves.
It's literally more vampires and werewolves.
Oh,
it's,
I have seen none of these movies.
It's not the first one.
It's on Netflix, so we're going to watch it.
Scott Speedman is in it. He's pretty.
How many of the Underworld series are on Netflix? Because I feel...
You're feeling brisky.
Binge coming on.
Feeling ambitious. Underworld Evolution is the second one, so if you want to go down this path, you only have to watch two movies to get to the part that's relevant to us.
And they're both on Netflix. So
we are going to talk about at least one Underworld movie. I have no memory. I know I saw the original. I know I was newly at college when the first one came out. And I just remember Werewolves in the Color Blue and Kate Beckinsale. Like everything. This is where it's really, everything is shot really blue, right?
I also constantly want Jennifer Connelly to be in these movies.
Huh?
Like, I just, my conflation of her and Kate Beckinsale is never worse than when it comes to the subject of these movies.
This is one of the 3 out of 5 Underworld movies that went to number one. Underworld in 2003, Evolution in 2006, and Awakening in 2012.
Wow,
and
there are 5.
There are technically 6 because there's an animated direct-to-DVD one.
All right. Well, I'm excited to dive in once again, mostly because it's free.
Yes. Yay, free.
It's free, and we are becoming werewolf and vampire
aficionados.
Glass hit number one just over a year ago, January 18th of 2019. What was the number one song in America when Glass took over the box office?
No idea.
Was it Ariana Grande?
Close, but no. She was all over the early part of that year. The year started with Thank You Next,
right.
and by February 2nd, Seven Rings would begin a 5-week reign and would come back again later, but no, not this week.
Meghan Trainor?
No, Meghan Trainor continues to be mostly a TV host, and we're all happy about it.
What is she? Okay.
I didn't know she was a TV host.
Me either.
She's on The Voice or The Dance or the Jim Jam
or
something.
Or the what?
Yeah. These are guys that, as a person over 30, I have no frame of reference for. This is two people in that weird, vague, are you R&B, are you hip-hop, are you pop sphere.
And are they, is it a duo or is this a so-and-so plus so-and-so?
The latter.
Okay.
Tyler, the Creator?
No. I will now say that I know which one it is. This is a very recognizable movie song.
I assume the movie was out last year.
Well, late in 2018. This is a recognizable song from a movie that I'm pretty sure all of us love.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a Marvel movie?
Yes and no.
Deadpool?
Ooh, it's from Spider-Man.
Yes.
So it's the Sway Lee and Post Malone.
Yes.
And it's called Sunflower.
That is correct.
Okay.
That is.
Whoa.
That is,
wow. Okay.
That's the best anyone can do at remembering who does that song or what it's called. It's a thing where the thing Spider-Man sings it, and then Post Malone's involved, and it's called. Yeah.
I can't believe I got through so much information about it before I got to the title of it, which I think is the only thing I should know.
And the guy was wearing pink socks in the video, and
I can listen to it in my head, but I can't tell you one word in the song. My head
Sunflower's
just goes,
in there. Just like Miles Morales.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. That's what I know. It's probably a good song. Who the hell knows?
Number one.